21. And chapter 21 is on magnetic forces and fields. We started off talking about magnets. Okay, a typical bar magnet looks like this. It has poles, a north pole and a south pole. Okay, I can walk around the magnet with a compass and map out a magnetic field. So you have the magnetic field around a bar magnet, kind of looks like that. Okay, and the field lines go from the north pole to the south pole. And we talked about how we could do something similar with the Earth, to pretend that the Earth had a bar magnet in the middle of it with the north magnetic pole, which is actually what kind of pole? South pole. Okay. So we looked at this, and then we moved on. If I have a charge that's moving in a magnetic field, that charge will feel a force. The magnitude of the force is given by QVB sine theta. B is the magnetic field. Units of magnetic field are typically in Tesla. Okay, but one Tesla is a relatively strong magnet. The magnetic field is much smaller than this, so there's a unit 10 to the minus 4th Tesla, which is 1 Gauss. So typically, one measures magnetic fields in Gauss. Okay, for typical magnetic fields. And for very strong fields, right, we measure them in Tesla. The other thing, since this is a force has not only magnitude, it also has direction. Okay, so here are the magnetic. If the magnetic field lines are going in that direction, you can take your right hand, point your fingers in the direction of the magnetic field, your thumb in the direction of the motion of the charge, the velocity direction, and your palm pushes in the direction of the force. So we saw that this goes into the board, providing it's a positive charge. If it's a negative charge, the force is opposite, out of the board. And then the other thing we note is, contrary to what we said the other day, which I don't know where that came from, the sine of 90 degrees is 1, which means that the maximum force that you're going to get, okay, is when V is perpendicular to B. And the sine of 0 is 0, so when the charge is moving along with the magnetic field, okay, there's no force. So there's a range of force going from 0 to maximum as far as the magnitude. Okay, another consequence is the cyclotron radius, which I redrew. It's the last thing we had talked about in class. Okay, if I have a charge, I start off with a charge moving in a magnetic field. The other thing is that typically for some of these problems, I'd like to sketch the magnetic field going in or out of the board. So this magnetic field, the blue X's here, is a magnetic field which is going which way? Into the board, because that's like the feathers on an arrow going away from you. If it's coming toward you, they're dots like some of these other pictures. Okay, so I have a positive charge moving with a velocity this way. So right-hand rule, magnetic field into the board, velocity in the direction of my thumb, pushing upward. So therefore, the charge will accelerate since there's a net force acting on it. So acceleration means there's going to be a change in velocity. Well, it turns out in this situation, okay, that since the magnetic field's not doing work on this charge, okay, there's not going to be a change in the speed but there will be a change in the direction. And so there'll be a directional change. Then it gets to another position, and I exaggerated, right? Instead of going just a little bit, I went a lot, so we can see. Once this is moving up here, say moving with the velocity in this direction, then we go in, magnetic field into the board, velocity vector up, it's pushing in that direction. And as it goes around and around, you get to see that the force is perpendicular to the velocity. They are both perpendicular to the magnetic field. And these forces continually point inward, and they point to a center. Okay, you get a circle. So we have circular motion, as I said, for this particular case. So you have a constant speed in a circle is uniform circular motion. Now, what you learned way back when was that if I have an object moving in uniform circular motion, okay, such as a ball on a string, when you're twirling it, right, the tension is what's pulling on it. In this case, we have magnetic force is the force. So you have the net force is equal to the mass times the acceleration. So you have a centripetal acceleration is that acceleration that results. Okay, some people like to call these things forces. I don't like to call them forces because that's on the acceleration side of the equation. This is the force. The only real force here, in my mind, is the magnetic force. That magnetic force causes an acceleration, which is a centripetal acceleration. So F equals ma. Why isn't there a sine theta? Because sine theta is 1. What is theta again? Theta is the angle between the magnetic field and the velocity. So what we need is the following, all right? So magnetic field's into the board. The velocity is pointing in this direction. So if you look at that and measure it, it's 90 degrees. So sine of 90 is 1. And that's so there the magnetic force is equal to ma. I can rearrange this equation and solve for what the radius of the circle is. And so the radius, if I bring that up, I have mv squared over qvb. One of the v's disappears, and I get mv over qb. So that gives me the radius for this circular motion. Why do they call it cyclotron radius? In the old days, people used to build cyclotrons. What they did was they would take these objects that looked like a tuna can that you cut in half. All right, so imagine a tuna can that's cut in half. You didn't take the lid off of it, dump all the tuna out. All right, you take two of them, and you put one here, and you put one there, and they're made out of copper or something. And you can connect these two. Well, actually, you connect it to some alternating source. And what you do is you now put in a charge. If this side, the left side, is positive and the right side is negative, and let's say that's a positive charge, what's that positive charge want to do? It wants to go to the negative side. So it starts moving. But what if I also have a magnetic field there? What's the magnetic field going to cause that moving charge to do?
Accelerate.
Well, it's going to try to cause it to go in a circle. Okay, so it starts to go in this circle. But this is an alternating field, so this is going to jump back and forth between positive and negative. So if I have a positive charge here, this becomes positive, it's going to push it the other way. So now, it's going to get a little bit of impetus that way, it's going to start speeding up. Once V gets bigger and bigger, what's going to happen to R? It's going to increase. So you're going to end up, and as this goes back and forth between charges, it's going to get, and if you do it just right, you do it at just the right frequency, you can kick it at the right time so that you can get that to go around and around, and it's going to go faster and faster and bigger circles, and then finally it's going to go flying off at some designated location and hit a target, and then you'll have an atom smasher. Okay, so that's just a simplistic version. Okay, these things, since they look like D's, are called D's, D-E-E-S. Okay, and that's the idea of a cyclotron. So the cyclotron radius, okay, is based on this principle, except here I don't have that extra energy being supplied, okay, by the D's to cause the radius to grow to get this up to a speed that I need so I can smash it into something. This is like smashing things into other things. See what happens. Okay? So that's the basic idea for this. Now here I have another example based on this. Something a little simpler than the one I just had. Okay, here I have a positive charge and I'm going to put it between two plates. Okay, one's a positively charged plate, one's a negatively charged plate. I'm going to put a little hole in there so that I can send the charge into a magnetic field and see what happens. Now let's throw some numbers on here. Let's say I put a potential difference across these plates of 1,000 volts. Say this is a proton. So across that 1,000 volts I have a proton. Let's assume it's at rest to begin with. What's it going to do?
Speed up.
It's going to speed up. And at some point it's going to come out with some velocity v. Okay. What's it going to do after it comes out? It's going to go in a circle. Which way? Okay. So I've made some changes here, right? What are those dots mean? The magnetic field is coming towards us. So when this proton comes out, which way is the circular arc going to go? It's going to go up, or it's going to go down?
Go down. Down.
Okay, everybody says down. Okay, so what do? Take your right hand, the magnetic field's coming out, whoops. All right, velocity's going that way, so it's going to be pushed down. So that's right. So this gets pushed down. In fact, it's going to follow an arc like that. What's the radius of that circular arc? I have to figure it out, right? Yeah, it's going to be mv over qb. M is the mass of the proton. We know that. We can look it up. Q is the charge of the proton. We know that. B, I need a B. Let's say this is about 0.1 tesla. That's probably not the number I picked, but whatever. Okay? What about V? Oh, I don't know V yet. So I have to find V first. So one, I need to know how fast it's moving when it's coming out of that hole. Actually, that part of the problem is not this chapter. That's an earlier chapter, right? That's a problem I could have put on the test. Maybe I did put it on the test. Okay, so how do we figure that out? Well, an easy way to figure this out is conservation of energy. I start here with stored energy. So I know that I'm going to start with the electrical potential energy and no kinetic energy at the start. That's going to be equal to the kinetic energy plus the electrical potential energy at that point. Okay, or I could just write the change in potential electrical potential energy is just the kinetic energy. I could adjust my electrical potential energy to be zero here, and then what is the electrical potential energy at that point? Well, it's going to be related to the 1,000 volt potential difference. Princeton, kinetic energy. There is V, we know the mass. So what is the stored energy across these plates? Well, it's just going to be the charge times the potential difference. Right, the amount of work that's done to move charges across 1,000 volts would be minus E times delta V. And so what I've charged, I've saved is that much energy. Let's see, solve this for V squared. So V squared is going to be 2 E delta V, big V. Make my big V's look big, divided by the mass proton. So that's 2 times 1.6 times 10 to the minus 19 times 1,000, which is 10 to the third volts, divided by, and then the mass of a proton is 1.67. 10 to the negative 27, is that what I heard? So V squared. All right, so that's almost 1, so that's roughly 2. And then this 10 to the minus 19 and 3 is 10 to the minus 16 at 27 to minus 16. And you get what, 11? So what's the exact value?
1.92.
What?
1.92.
1.92.
Right.
Roughly. And I want to take the square root of this, but that's not an even power, so I can pull off a 10. If I borrow a 10 from 10 to the 11th, I can multiply that 10 times a 1.9 to get 19.2. And now I can take the square root of 19, which is 4 point something.
4.38.
4.38, maybe 4.4, because I don't have that many sig figs. The square root of 10 to the 10th is just divide 10 by 2. Okay, so where can I write this? 10. Maybe I'll do it down here. Because square root of 10 to the 10th is the same thing as 10 to the 10th raised to the 1/2. Everybody knows the square root is raising something to the 1/2. And when I have something raised to a power, 10 times a half is 5. So that's 10 to the 5th. So that's 4 times, basically 4 times 10 to the 5th units, or everything's been done in SI, so I expect meters per second. All right, so that proton's moving pretty fast. Second step. What's the radius of the semicircle? That's what I originally wanted to know. So we just come over here, take the cyclotron radius. R is equal to mv over qb. Of course, I could have solved for this algebraically. People get upset sometimes when you do that. Okay, mass of the proton, 1.67 times 10 to the minus 27. V is 4.4 times 10 to the 5th. Divided by the charge, which is E, that's 1.6 times 10 to the minus 19. The magnetic field was 0.1. 0.1 is a nice easy number, that's why I picked it. So 1 would have been high, even 0.1 seems a little. Okay, so we have 1.67 divided by 1.6 times 4.4 is going to give me, 4.6? I don't know, 4 point something.
4.6. 4.6.
4.6. Good guess. All right. That takes care of the 4, the 1.6, and 7, and 1.6. Now I look at powers of 10. 10 to the minus 27 plus 5 is 10 to the minus 22. And then between the two of these, I get 10 to the minus 20. So minus, so that looks like what? 10 to the minus 2? Is that right? Minus 27 plus 5 is minus 22. Divided by minus 20 is minus 22 plus 20. Minus 2. So that's just a few centimeters. So there's my answer for that problem. So that gives you an idea. In this case, you see we're putting together several bits of physics. That's basically a two-step problem. We first have to get from here to here using the earlier results for electric fields, and then we now use the new stuff for magnetic fields. All right, there are some other configurations that one can have in which we can use magnetic fields. Here's a couple of them. We've heard of mass spectrometers. All right, the idea of a mass spectrometer is I can send in a beam of stuff with masses of different isotopes, for example. Okay, and if I ionize them, so if they're charged, okay, then what I can do is I can send these in, and if they're positively charged, what do we have here? Okay, we have the field coming out toward you. The velocity vector is pointing up, so initially the force is pushing this direction, right? So that this charge that's coming in here is going to start to go like that. And we're going to have this moving with some radius. But if I have two different isotopes in this beam of ions that's going through here, then how is that going to affect things? What does it mean to have an isotope of something?
They're different molecular weights.
They have different molecular weights. Right? Same number of protons, but different molecular weights. Right? Because they can have a couple different numbers of neutrons. Okay, so you come over here, the heavier isotope is going to have a bigger radius. Alright, so you come over and have a bigger radius. So what this will essentially do is split them up, and then I can have little bins or something over here where I can collect them. So I can separate out isotopes. Another device is a velocity selector, right? We make these beams with a whole bunch of particles coming in, and we want to select a particular small range of velocity so that when they come out here, I have a beam where all the particles are going roughly the same speed, okay? So how does that work? All right, the way I have this picture drawn so far, I have a charge that comes in here. So this charge comes in from the magnetic field. What's it going to feel? A force pointing in which direction? All right. That field's going into the board. I'm assuming, again, positive charges. If I have negative charges, just reverse everything. So I've got a field going in this way. Velocity is there, so this is forcing it up. All right, so the picture that I have is I've got a charge and it's got a magnetic force that's pointing upward. Now you can imagine what those other bars are doing there. All right, these are two plates. I'm going to charge them. What I'd like to do is charge these so that I can have a field that competes with this force. What I'd like is an electric force that's pointing in that direction. So assuming that's a positive charge, what would the charge on the upper plate have to be? positive. Right? This is a positive charge, and I charge these plates with opposite charges. Make this positive, that'll push the positive charge down. Make the bottom one negative, that'll pull the charge. Okay, and now I have competing forces. If the magnetic field is stronger than the electric field, what's going to happen is this charge is going to move like that. Okay, that's if FB wins. If FE wins, so FE is bigger than FB, FB bigger than FE at the top. And if I can just tune it correctly, there's got to be a happy medium here where they cancel each other and FB equals FE, right? In magnitude. But what do we know about FB? FB equals FE. What is FB? Well, we go all the way to the front panel, and F is just going to be QBB sine theta. What's theta in this case?
90.
Sine of 90 is 1. So this is just QBB. What is the electrical force acting on that charge?
EQ.
If I have a charge moving through an electric field, what force does it feel? Charge times something.
Charge times electric.
About E. QE? Okay. Does that look familiar? F equals QE. So if I have an electric field and I have a magnetic field acting on this and I want them to cancel, these quantities are equal. Notice that the Q's go away. Okay. And in fact, I can solve for what V is. What E over B. So the particles that get through in a straight line without crashing into the plates or going off the edge this way, okay, will have a speed of E over B. Okay. So I can make adjustments. If there's a speed I want, I just have to tune in what the magnetic field is, or I have to change what the voltage is across the plates, which in turn gives me the electric field. Okay. So that's what a velocity selector is. All right, so those are different types of applications and gives us some ways to start thinking about the right-hand rule in terms of charges moving, okay, in a magnetic field. Now, we can also take wires and put them in magnetic fields and have current running through the wire, or namely have a charge moving in a magnetic field. So we can look at the force on a current wire. So in this case, I'm going to take a piece of wire . Let's say that wire has a length L, it also has current running in it. Let's say the current is running upward in this case. So far that's relatively simple. But I'm also going to put this in a magnetic field, a uniform field. And let's say the uniform field is going similar to what I started drawing. First panel with some charges. So I have a magnetic field. My claim is that this wire is going to feel a force. And we can think of this, if I think of that, right, that's conventional current, and we think of conventional current as the direction positive charge would flow. Okay, or if you wanted to think about electrons, electrons are flowing in the opposite direction. But there's charge flowing. If I focus on a point and ask how much charge flows past that point at a given time, I can look at that charge and say just on that amount of charge that flows, right, there's a certain amount of force acting on the charge. It's just going to be the amount of charge I see, Vb sine theta. So the force is going to be the amount of charge, right? So I'm going to write the amount of charge as delta Q. Because I have an intent. For using this, I'm going to follow that charge. Times how fast the charge is moving. So if I look at the charge, this charge moves from here to here in, say, some small time. Okay, and if I watch over a period of time, this is how much charge flows between those two points. And then I have how fast it's moving. And then what else do I need? The magnetic field, sine theta. Well, theta is really just the angle this wire is making with respect to the magnetic field. So there's theta. Now delta t is the time I was watching, so let me divide delta q by delta t. Of course, I can't just do that and stop. I need to multiply by delta t. So I'm going to multiply by delta t. I have b sine theta. So all I've done is multiply and divide by delta t. But we know what delta q over delta t is, don't we? The change in charge per time.
Current.
Current, right? So now I get my current in here. So that's equal to I. V delta t, that's the, right? Basically, I have charge that's going in delta t from here to here, moving at a certain speed. Anything that moves at a certain speed and a certain time, if I multiply the speed times the time, what does that give me?
Distance.
Basically, it gives me the distance the charge flows. Well, if I watch for the whole time that the charge goes from the bottom end to the top end,
L.
That's just L. So that's distance, L. V sine theta. So if I look at the whole, instead of just looking at the force on that little chunk, I'm looking at the force along the whole bar, I find out that the force acting on this current carrying wire is nothing other than ILB sine theta. And voila, now we have another equation to add to our list. Okay. But it's really just based off of here. I replaced Q with current, and since I threw in the delta T, that gets replaced with the length. Okay, so what else can I do with that? Well, we could put some numbers in, I guess. So there's a problem in the back of the book. It says essentially, I have some current. Let's say that that current is 0.66 amps. Let's say the angle is 58 degrees with respect to the magnetic field, or at least in my picture. And what else do we know? Let's say the magnetic field is 4.7 times 10 to the minus 5 Tesla. And we notice that when I have this much current running through that piece of wire, my device registers a force, and I know what the force is. So the force is 7.1 times 10 to the minus 5 newtons, right? Not very much force. It's not like it's jumping across the table. Okay. And so the question is, how long is the wire? Well, this is just a very simple problem. A little bit simpler than the last one we did. Just solve this for L. And so L is equal to F over I d sine theta. And it's a simple matter of just plugging these numbers in. Now, one of the things you have to always watch out for is to make sure your calculator is set for degrees or radians, depending upon what the problem calls for, right? Of course, in this case, it's in degrees. Okay. And a quick check would be, so to take the sine of 30. If you compute the sine of 30 and get 1/2, then you know it's in degree mode. All right. Instead of going and trying to figure out, now where do I change that mode setting? Okay, you can worry about that later if it has to be changed. All right, so if you go through this, I think the answer was something like 2.7 meters. So I'm not going to actually go through and plug the numbers in. It's all set up. You can do the numbers. So essentially, we have a very small force. This is 2.7 meters. Now that's a pretty... I can't even reach that, right? So you need a really long piece of wire to feel a lot of force. Okay. All right, another type of an example is when we have two wires. Let me consider two parallel wires. Now this takes a little thinking. In a lot of these cases, you've got to just think about what's going on, not quickly look for an equation. In fact, I don't think our book has the equation written down, but okay, would actually find out what the force is between two parallel wires with currents in them. But here's the idea. Let's say I have a wire, and this wire has current I1 running through it. And I'm going to put a wire that's parallel to it. And let's say that has a current running through it of I2. And these two wires are separated by some distance d. It's going to feel a force due to the other one. There is no, I'm not putting an external magnetic field in the system. So how is it that these wires feel force? Of course, your first impression, if I told you this last semester, you would say, oh, gravity. Right? Because, right, they've got masses, right? Two masses will attract each other. Okay, but that's a minor effect. Okay? What I'm really interested in, okay, is that this is a direct application. Not an application of that. Yeah, I jumped the gun here. Sorry. Okay, this is a problem we're going to do. Let's put it that way. So it is a direct application of this, but I need one more thing. Okay, what we're going to find out is that if I have current running through the wire, it produces a magnetic field. This is going to feel it. Okay? So, these wires can produce magnetic fields, and we're going to feel those. And so that's up and coming, or preview of coming attractions. Just to keep the excitement level up. Okay, so what other kinds of things can we do? What I really want to do is a little more complicated than that, actually. Okay, but it's related to some real applications. Here's a word that you might not have heard in a while. Torque. What's torque? like this, right? I've got an axis up here. If I apply a force down here, what's it going to do? It's going to rotate. All right? If I constantly apply a force, basically, I am causing it an angular acceleration. Right? Just like when you apply a force, you get a linear acceleration, right? You apply a torque, you get an angular acceleration. Torque depends upon how far you are from the axis, the amount of force you're applying, and the angle that the force makes with respect to the vector from the axis to the point of application. Okay. So that's torque. Now it turns out that we can look at a loop of wire. Typically we have a loop that looks something like this. I'll make it with square corners. Doesn't have to be. It's easier to draw. Okay. I'm going to have a loop. I'm going to have some current that's going in this loop. Actually, this is set up in such a way, okay, that I do this. There's a shaft. I'm going to let current go up the loop, around the loop, down the loop, and back down here to some source. And then on either side of this, I'm going to put some holes. Okay. And what kind of orientation do I want? Make sure I don't let my memory mess me up. All right, so this is going to be north, and that's going to be a south pole. Okay. So I'm going to create a uniform magnetic field in here. And what that's going to do is cause some force to act on that loop, and that loop is actually going to turn. And since it's going to turn, the bottom here can get twisted. So typically what you'll do is you'll, well, that's technology. You have to figure out what to do at this end so it doesn't twist up, right? Typically what you do is you put what are called brushes, so that it's not really fixed there. It's just touching so that the charge can get from the battery or whatever, the source, okay, over to here. Okay. So the idea is I have electrical energy going into this loop. This is going to start to spin. Okay. And I can convert that to mechanical energy. Now, since current's going on this loop, the question is, okay, essentially, where is the force acting on the loop? Which way is the magnetic field? And we have magnetic field, which is pointing in that direction. And so essentially what we're going to, the force that's coming about is actually going to be due to the vertical pieces. So let's say I'm looking straight down. On top of that, what do I have? I have the top piece, whatever direction that is. And then I have this wire. The current's coming up. So I can put a little dot there. And then the current goes around. The current's going down on the other side. The magnetic field is pointing in this direction. And now I could look to see what the action is, what the force is on this. So let's see, what kind of force am I going to have on these points? The current is coming up, so I have a wire right? The current's going this way, the magnetic field's going that way. Now remember, in this picture, right, we have charge going in the direction of the current. So what I could do is ask what the direction of the force is. I didn't ask what the direction was before, but I could, right? Point my direct finger in the direction of the positive charge, actually in the direction of the current. This goes in the direction of the field, and this into the board, just like before. Right? So if I'm thinking of this as charges, positive charges moving, I can easily get the direction. Now we think here, which way is the current coming? Up, toward you. Which way is the field? This way. Which way is the force? Up. So there is a force acting due to this current. What about the other side? I gave that away. Okay. The current is going down. Remember, this is the top view. So the current is going down. The field is going in that direction. So the force is downward. Since I'm writing that as a vector, I'll put a minus in front of that because if that's positive, the other opposite direction is negative. So now I have these two forces that are acting on this, and right in the middle is the shaft. And it's like my meter stick. I have this meter stick here, okay? But I'm going to fasten this in the middle. I'm going to have one force on that side pushing down, and I've got another force helping at this end. All right, I've got a torque. It's going to cause this to rotate about the shaft. Okay, what I'm interested in is what is the torque? Okay, that's being produced by the force. So the torque we have to go back a ways to think about the torque. Okay, if I were looking at the force on the left side, what I need is what's called, well, basically the torque is going to be the moment arm times the force. But I need this distance. Let's say that the whole distance across here is W, and let's say that the length up and down is L. All right. So the current that's flowing through each of these pieces has gone through a piece of wire of length L. Right? That's like two copies of this vertical. And then, right, of course, I can have to say something about how far apart these two pieces are. That's W apart. So if I want, I can take this to be, well, it's going to be half a W. Okay? So the torque in the old days was something like Rf sine phi, where phi is the angle between the applied force and this guy. Well, actually, that's phi, but the sine of that angle is the sine of that, so I can take those to be the same. Now what? The force, well, I have to put that in there, but that force really comes from that last equation. R, that distance, is W over 2. So what I have is W over 2. The force is ILB sine of theta. Theta is the distance between the current and the magnetic field, I mean the angle between them. So the current is going this way, the magnetic field is going that way, and the angle is
90.
Right, so I don't need a sine of theta, I just have a sine of phi though. So this reason they put a phi here instead of a theta and gave me another Greek letter is because theta corresponds to that angle, whereas phi corresponds to the angle that this particular loop is making with respect to the magnetic field at the time I'm looking. All right, that's the torque. Actually, I'll call that torque 1 because that's just the torque due to one of the forces. Well, the torque for the other piece has the same magnitude, right? Same current, same length. I'm assuming this is a nice rectangular shape. Okay, same magnetic field, same W, so that torque's going to be the same. So the total torque is just twice this. going to be W I L B sine. So there's the torque on the barn. Once I know what the torque is, then I can tell you something about the angular behavior. Right, because torque is equal to I alpha. Okay, going back to whatever chapter that was, chapter 9 or 10, okay, last semester. All right, so that appears to be nice. Well, actually, it turns out that W times L has a meaning. If I look at that picture and I take W times L, what is that?
Area.
Area. So that's just the area of the loop. So I could write this as IAB, where A is the area.
And now I can generalize.
It turns out that it doesn't have to be a rectangular loop. It could be a circular loop, except my area is pi r squared. All right, so I can put any shaped loop I want in there, and I'm happy. In fact, I can put in more than one loop. All right, who's to say I couldn't create a loop by going around a couple of times before coming out? So what if I have n loops? Well, that's just going to increase the torque. So for n loops, tau is equal to n I a b sine v. And that's the expression that tells me what the torque is on a current carrying loop that's in a magnetic field. NIA has nothing to do with the magnetic field. So this, the book doesn't use this letter. That's a Greek noun called mu. But other physics books do. That combination is called the magnetic moment. Magnetic moment. Now that might ring a bell.
I didn't plan on it ringing the bell.
But that's it's related to the bonus. Right? Looking at MRI and things like that, magnetic resonance, and okay, people look at magnetic moments in these things. Right? That's the same magnetic moment, except in this case, it's the magnetic moment maybe of an atom or something small, which is actually going around in a loop, and since it's a charge, it really is just a little current loop. Okay, and so there's all sorts of interesting physics there. All right, so that's the idea of the torque acting on a loop. Okay, but we're still sitting with bated breath wondering how to do this other problem. Right? So let me move on. The rest of the main part of the rest of the chapter says the following. And besides currents being affected by external magnetic fields, it turns out that if I have currents in wires, they produce magnetic fields. So let's see how that's possible. Well, we won't see how it's possible, we'll just say it is. All right, you have to go in the lab and do the experiment. So, I mean, it just happened. I mean, it's, you know how some of these labs are. Some people are pretty messy. They leave wires and things laying all around, compasses, right? And then you go in, and you turn on the current through some wire, and you notice the needle and the compass moves. You go, whoop, what happened? Oh, there's an experiment. Let me get some funding. Okay? And so the idea is you start cranking up the current, you move the compass around, you make some measurements, and you find out that currents and wires produce magnetic fields. There's a whole general theory, of course, and with these formulae I'm ready to write down actually need to be derived, okay, from knowing some calculus, and we're not going to derive them, we're just going to tell you the results for some simple configurations of wires with currents. And of course, the simplest, okay, let's see, first off, currents produce magnetic field. So this is, what's the simplest configuration of a wire? Simplest current carrying wire. What?
Straight.
There you go, yeah. Straight wire. All right, so let's see. Long means we'll stay away from the end. Straight wire. So if I have a long piece of wire, or section of wire, I run a current and then I walk around it with a little con- the magnetic field. Well, it's proportional to the current, so if I increase the current, the strength of the field goes up. And it's inversely proportional to to the distance away. So if my observation point is the distance r away from the wire, right, that's perpendicular to it, right? It's not r from here to here, right? The shortest distance between the wire and my observation point. Then it's inversely proportional to that. So the further away I go, it's not 1 over r squared, it's 1 over r. Okay? And there's some proportionality constant. And the proportionality constant has been taken in such a way that the constant, which is called mu zero, is actually, it's mu zero over 2 pi. It's a proportionality constant, but it's written in terms of something called mu zero. And mu zero is one of the strangest looking constants that you would see in physics, maybe not in a math class. Because it's not like 1.56 or whatever, all right? All the different kinds of constants you can think of. It is 4 pi times 10 to the minus 7. Okay, in terms of its magnitude. And of course, what I want is that when I plug that number in here, and I plug in amps, and I plug in meters, I better get out Teslas. Right, so I'm going to have Tesla meter per amp as a unit. Okay, that's a strange looking unit, right? So why don't you just multiply the 4 times the pi and give me a couple of digits? Well, 4 pi is exact. That's about as an exact number you can get, right? Most of the other numbers are, don't seem quite as exact. So that might seem a little strange. Okay, this is called the permeability. Of free space. Thanks. So obviously I can put various numbers in here. I can put in a current, start popping out some numbers and show you what the field is, right? But you'll see that when you're doing the homework and what the sizes look like. But once I have this, then I can go to that other problem that you've been worried about. What happens when I have 2 wires? Okay, so you've been sitting here all the while thinking about this problem. Okay, so 2 wires. So again, here I have a wire, has a current I1. There's another wire with a current I2. They're separated by some distance d. Okay, and now what we have to do is put all of our thought processes together to determine what the force is acting on the wires. Why is there a force acting on the wires? Okay, well, let's think about this piece. All right, what we just learned was if I have a current going through that wire, it produces a magnetic field. There it is. The strength of the magnetic field is given by this. In particular, at that location, there's a magnetic field. Okay? So if there's a that means wire two is sitting in a magnetic field. It has a current going through it, therefore, it's going to feel a force. Okay? Everybody happy with that? Now, if I want to know what the force is, I really should know what direction the magnetic field is. Well, if I go back to this picture, I didn't tell you what the direction of the magnetic field was, did I? What I have to do is I have to go with my little compass and walk around and find out which way the compass points. If the current is going up, then I can tell you what the direction is with a new right-hand rule. Are we ready for a new right-hand rule? Okay. So here's the wire. Let's assume this is my wire. Okay. The current's going up. I grab this with my right hand, with my thumb pointing in the direction of the current, and my fingers wrap in the direction of the magnetic field. Okay? So what does that tell you? On this side, the field's going into the board, then it comes back, and on that side, it's coming out. So in this picture, at this point, the field's going in, and at that point, the field is coming out. So the field goes right into the board, coming out. If I look downward, there's my wire. Field's coming out. The magnetic field is pointing in that direction. Whoops, let's see, where am I? If I'm looking down. Okay. So the field's coming out. It's going around, right hand. This side it's going up. That side it's going down, is what I said. Of course, if I'm back here, the magnetic field is going that direction. If I'm over here, the magnetic field's going this direction. Of course, all I'm interested in right now are these two points. But it's really going around. The magnetic field lines are going in this direction. If I change the direction of the current, what do you think is going to happen? It's going to go the other way. All right? And you can see that, right? Go down. Now the field's going into the left and out of the right. What does that tell me for this wire? I2, which way is the magnetic field?
Same direction.
Same direction as what?
I1.
As this picture. So I mean, if I have current going up I1, what does the magnetic field look like that this is producing right here? Like that picture, right? It's going in. So there's a magnetic field at this location. That magnetic field is given by mu zero I1 over 2 pi times the distance. In this case, C is equal to R. So I know what the magnetic field is at this point. I could call that the magnetic field due to 1. What does that tell you? That tells you I have a wire that's sitting in this magnetic field. It's going to feel a force. Which way is the force acting on that piece of wire? Well, remember four forces, right? If I want to know the force, you put your fingers in the direction of the magnetic field, your thumb in the direction of the current. Which way is it pointing? All right? Magnetic field
current.
There's the force.
I could actually compute the force. ILB. The angle's 90. So ILB, where B is that B? So I could actually compute that force. Guess what? This one also feels a force. Okay? Just thinking about the directions the field's being produced, the question is which direction is the force acting on this one? So there's a force acting on the second one due to the first one that's pushing this way. What about that?
Opposite direction.
Opposite direction? Do we agree? Okay. All right, so this current's going up, but it's produced, where's the magnetic field that this current is producing?
It's coming out.
Okay. It's coming out of the board, so this is going to be like that. Since that's coming out of the board, current's going up in that field, right? In this location, there's field coming out this way due to that. So that's coming up, that's pushing. So what would we see? We'd see the two wires pull towards each other. Now what you want to do is ask yourselves, what happens if they're both going down? What if one's going up and the other one's going down? Okay, those are the types of things that you want to see if you can figure out. Because who knows, that might be on a test. Okay, so if you can really get this down, do that. The book, I believe, the book has a few different conceptual questions with different orientations of wires. All right, that's just one case, a long straight wire. Another common shape for wires is a circular loop. In this case, I can take a piece of wire in the shape of a loop. And I can have some current going through it. All sorts of ways I can do this. I can draw like that. Now there is a problem. Not a very good loop, but it might work. Usually I have more toys laying around that people leave laying around that I can use. All right, so there's a loop of wire. All right, basically I have something that looks like that, and I want current to go around here and ask what's the magnetic field. Well, it's kind of hard to see this, right? If I have this sitting like that, I really just put some kind of an axis there, so maybe it looks more three-dimensional. Okay. So anyway, so this end is facing more towards you than that end is. Now, this is a difficult problem in general. I could ask, what's the magnetic field here, here, there, there? Okay, we're only going to tell you what the magnetic field is at the center of the loop. Okay, you take your right hand. I mean, you could, one way to do this is just take a little piece of wire like that, wrap your hands around it, you see that there's some, right? Field lines going in this direction, going around that way, they're doing the same thing, right? But the sum total amounts to the following. If I take my fingers and go around the loop, my thumb points in the direction of the magnetic field. All right, take your right hand, wrap it around the loop. If this is the current's going in that, going in this direction, I just go like that. I can see this coming out. If it's going in the opposite direction, just like that, but it's at the center. So B is at the center of the loop. Okay. So that's for a
circular loop. That circular loop has a radius, which the book called big R. And B is, again, mu zero I in the numerator. But more. Which I'll just write down right now, and I'll...